last time we were talking about the far-reaching attitude of generosity, generosity being the wish to give. And specifically, there were three kinds of generosity. Material generosity, giving our body, giving possessions, giving money. There's the generosity of giving protection to those who are in danger or stress or freaked out. And then the generosity of Dharma, which is either teaching the Dharma or giving advice to people, counseling, helping people out using Dharma methods. So we covered those three basic subdivisions of the far-reaching attitude of generosity. And then I want to go into a little bit more about the giving of the body, possessions, and then our root of virtue or our positive potential. Because Shantideva, in his other text called Laptu, not in the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, but the other text he wrote, then he gave some more description about these. And under each of these, he gave 4 points. So he talked about giving, protecting, keeping pure, and enhancing. So I'll go through these four for each one of those. So in terms of giving the body, then the first point under that is giving, which is giving the body, okay? So this can mean, the stories in the scriptures, the famous one is the one Jataka tale about the Buddha when he was a prince and was walking in the forest and saw a mother tiger who had 4 cubs, and the cubs were starving because the mother was starving and couldn't feed them. And so the Buddha, donated his body for the mother tiger to eat so that she would have milk to feed her cubs. And so there's an actual place in Nepal called Namo Buddha, which is the place that said that the Buddha in his previous rebirth did this. And so many people go there. It's not too far from Kathmandu. We can all go one day and, do a pilgrimage. And so many people go there to pray. And so there's that kind of story in the scripture about giving your body. Nowadays, we can give parts of our body. We can give our blood, we can give a kidney, we can give corneas, we can, give various parts of our body, and it doesn't necessitate giving our entire life for it. So those kinds of things we can do. The actual giving of the body, where it means giving up our life, then we're only really allowed to do that when we're Arya Bodhisattvas. In other words, when we're Bodhisattvas on the path of seeing and have direct perception of emptiness, because it's only at that point where you have the direct perception of emptiness that then you can control your rebirth, and where you have, sufficient wisdom so that it doesn't become harmful for your practice to actually give up your life and give the body in that way. So until we get to that time, what we should do is generate the wish to give our body. And, in the Tonglen meditation, when we radiate out, after we've taken the suffering, and then we imagine we give the body, okay, and our possessions and our positive potential. And so, by cultivating it in this meditation, imagining giving the body, and then also by generating the wisdom aspect, then one day we'll actually be able to do it. And for those Arya Bodhisattvas who can give their body, they're like so completely delighted. Yeah? In fact, they say for a bodhisattva, when a bodhisattva hears that somebody needs something, the bodhisattva is so excited because then they get to practice generosity. Okay? For us, it's the opposite, When we hear somebody needs something, we go, oh no, I have to do something. Oh. Okay? So in this point of giving of the body to, when it means giving the life, just to do that when it's, appropriate, when we're at that level of mind, when we can do it safely. But before that, not to do it. But in the meantime, we can give, blood donations or kidney or other things like that that can be really helpful for other people. And then The second point under giving the body there is protecting. Okay, so until we're at the point where we give the body, we should protect the body. In other words, not abuse it. We should make sure that we only give it when it's beneficial and when our mind is ready to give, and otherwise protect it from harm and keep it safe and keep it healthy, because on the basis of this human body, then we can use it to practice the path and attain enlightenment. And so for that reason, it's important to keep our body well and healthy. Okay, so that's why even though we're trying to lessen our attachment for our body and not cling to the body, we shouldn't go to the extreme of torturing the body and hating the body, because that is totally non-productive for the spiritual path. We have to take care of our body, but with a different motivation, not with the motivation of attachment, but rather with the motivation to use it as the basis for our practice so that we can gain the realizations and be of greater service to others. Okay. So that's an important motivation to kind of keep in mind, you know, when you're getting dressed, when you're combing your hair, when you're putting on your clothes, instead of, oh, well, I hope I look good, and, you know, I hope I smell good, and whatever else, you know, to really have that motivation in mind that we're using our body for the benefit of others, and for that reason we're taking care of it. And that's helpful also when you go to the doctor. Yeah. So instead of going to the doctor like, oh God, something's going to be wrong with me, and you know, the mind's just kind of overcome with fear and getting into that mode, to just see it as, well, I have this body that actually belongs to other sentient beings because I'm using it for the welfare of the other sentient beings. So I kind of have responsibility for taking care of it for their benefit, and so therefore I'm going to do the best I can. And so if you focus on that kind of motivation, you know, then all the fear and nervousness about, you know, what might be wrong goes away. Okay, because we're not grasping onto this body as ours, but we're seeing ourselves basically as a caretaker of something that is used to benefit others. Okay. We don't think of our body to use to benefit others very much, do we? We usually think of it in terms of how I can get the most pleasure from my body. So this is a real change in motivation. Real change in things. But if we can kind of habituate ourselves with that, it'd be really good. Okay, so we have giving of the body, protecting of the body. The third point is keeping it pure. Okay, so in other words, whether we give our body or whether we use our body for the benefit of others, to keep it pure in the sense of doing whatever we do with a proper attitude, with the motivation of bodhicitta, and not use our body or not give our body with either pride or expectation of receiving something from it, and to use our body or give our body only for the benefit of others, and to use it only in virtuous ways. And so not to give it or not to use our body, not to, you know, engage in any harmful actions with our body. And so in that way, to keep it pure. And then that's part of the perfection of generosity of the body as well. And then the fourth point under giving the body is enhancing or increasing. And so here, it's doing virtuous actions so that we can get a precious human rebirth in the next lifetime, so that we'll have that kind of body as a basis in future lifetimes, and especially the precious human life with the eight qualities. Remember, we went through that a long time ago. We talked about, you know, having good social position and economic standards, you know, economic means and power and respect in society, not because those things are desirable in a worldly way, but rather if you have them, then you can use, you know, those things to benefit others. It makes your, kind of enhances your precious human life. And so here, you know, we use the body, create merit, and then we dedicate that to have a precious human life in the future. Again, so we can use that for the benefit of others and use that to practice the path. And don't dedicate just for that, but also, you know, for the long-term goal of being able to practice the generosity of the body for the purpose of becoming enlightened to be able to benefit sentient beings. And so in that way, we really rejoice and never regret when we give and consistently dedicate it for the benefit of others. Okay? So is that clear how those four things, giving, protecting, keeping pure, and enhancing, they're all kind of different aspects of the generosity of the body? Okay? So now let's go through those same four using the generosity of material possessions. So this includes, you know, money or things that you have around the house. So giving, the first step, is giving our possessions and increasing the wish to give, and especially giving things we like. Okay, so don't just give things so that you can buy more or give the things that you don't like, but really try and train your mind to give the things that you like. And I was reading an article in Turning Wheel not too long ago, and one woman was talking about how she makes it a point every week or every 2 weeks to give something of hers that she likes. And I really thought about that, you know, where you really make a conscious effort, you know, every week or every 2 weeks, you kind of look at your house, around your house, and what is something I like, and then make a point to give that to somebody. Yeah. Pushing some buttons, huh? Yeah, but I can really, you know, when I thought about that, I mean, what a wonderful practice that would be to really train the mind not to be attached to things and to really train the mind to take delight in giving, because if there's things around our house that we really enjoy, then wouldn't it be nice to share that kind of happiness with somebody else by giving it to them? And so, you know, consistently training ourselves each week to give in that way, you know, and share that happiness with somebody. Should we try it for a month? Yeah? Yeah. But it might be interesting to try, you know, even in this next week, you know, try giving something that is yours that you like. Yeah? And as you give it, then really try, make the mind be happy to give. Yeah? Make the mind be happy to give. Or let the mind be happy to give. Maybe like that. Yeah, instead of making it, let it be happy. Instead of making it, you know, all tied up in knots. Okay. And then the protecting here refers to protecting our possessions and not giving them when giving would be harmful. Okay. So not giving when... you know, giving our possessions would hurt somebody else, or when the giving of our possessions would be wasted, okay? So it would just be frivolous and somebody else wouldn't appreciate it or wouldn't value it or something like that. So in that case, don't give, but rather protect the possessions until it's a time when the giving can be really, really valuable. Okay, so in other words, if you had something, you know, if you decided that you were going to make generosity of $500, you wouldn't give it to a three-year-old, okay, because they wouldn't know how to use it. They would probably sit there and drool on it, and it would be destroyed, and, you know, and the money would go to waste. So in that case, it's better to protect it and instead give it at a time later when it wouldn't be wasted, but somebody could really use it in a wise way. Okay? So that's the protecting part. Then the purifying part, or the keeping it pure part, is when we use our possessions or when we give them, to make sure that we do it with the bodhicitta motivation, the altruistic intention, again, without pride, without expectation, and to make sure that when we give our possessions that we're keeping them pure and they're not going to be misused or again, in a way to... that we don't engage in destructive actions when we're giving our possessions. Okay, so to keep them pure, whether we're giving them, whether we're keeping them, but not to involve them in any kind of destructive actions. Okay? So kind of not giving the money if somebody else is going to use it to buy firearms, but not keeping the money and then using it to buy firearms ourselves. Okay? But instead, you know, using it ourselves or giving it to others so that it becomes something that's beneficial. By the way, along this line, many people were saying, you know, because we're talking about the giving of possessions and finances, that they really appreciated at the conference having the fact that there were tickets made available for low-income and students. And, you know, several people commented to me how much they appreciated that. So that was a way for our group to give possessions, you know, by helping people in that way. Or if we give scholarships for retreats so people who can't afford can come on retreats, then we as a community, we as a group, accumulate that karma of the giving of possessions. And then to enhance that, when we give our possessions or whether we use them with the attitude of bodhicitta to dedicate all the positive potential from that so that in the future we can have possessions that, again, we can use in the Dharma practice. Because like we were talking before, if you're born in a lifetime where you don't have enough possessions, it becomes an obstacle to Dharma practice. So if you don't have enough food and you don't have a place to live, difficult to practice. So here, with our generosity of Dharma, we dedicate for the benefit of all sentient beings, the enlightenment of all sentient beings, and also so that in future lives, while we're still on the path, we have the possessions so that we can practice Dharma on the path and so that we can also make charity of our possessions to other friends while we're on the path. And I think that's really important. You know, those of us who live in a society where we really have so much abundance that we share our wealth with Dharma practitioners who don't have that kind of abundance. You know, and so for example, when the group sent the books to, we sent them to over 70 different places in, you know, Africa and ex-Soviet Union and Latin America. So it's this kind of generosity of the giving of the Dharma to people who don't have the resources to have Dharma books. And by the way, we've gotten some letters. You might want to look at them back of people saying how happy they are. Okay, so really to try and share our resources with other Dharma practitioners. So it might include, you know, helping Tibetans or helping other people who want to study or people who want to go to retreats or whatever. So, you know, those are the four steps, the giving, protecting, keeping pure, and enhancing or increasing for the giving of our possessions. Okay, and then the third one was the giving of the root of our virtue, in other words, our positive potential or our good karma. So whatever good karma we accumulate by all the various actions that we do, to be generous with that. Yeah. So instead of just, you know, accumulating positive potential and then dedicating, please may I, you know, meet this incredible person and have a great relationship. Instead of, you know, dedicating like that, you know, giving our merit, our root of virtue, imagine giving that to other people so that it becomes something really beneficial for all sentient beings. Okay, so the first step here is giving, and this refers to really dedicating or giving our positive potential from the depth of our heart. Yeah. So really having this attitude of, you know, whatever positive potential I have, I'm completely willing to give it to others, even if it means I don't experience the result of it. And although that's important, you know, that's actually impossible. You know, we can never transfer karma. You know, karma isn't like money. I can't, you know, make out a bank draft and take it from my account and put it in your account. But, you know, so we will experience the result of our karma nonetheless, but it's really important not to be attached to the good karma that we have. And I stress this because you can see sometimes in Asian countries, you know, because the people there are so aware of the importance of creating good karma, that the creation of good karma also almost becomes like spiritual money that people get very, very attached to. Okay? So everybody, you know, eagerly lines up to make food offering to the monastics so that they can accumulate a lot of good karma. Yeah? Or they, you know, sometimes elbow somebody else out of the way. You know, I'm going to offer the tea because I want the good karma of offering the tea. You can't do that. Yeah? So some kind of competition spirit or really seeing good karma like spiritual money. Okay? So the giving here of it is really to, you know, protect us from having that kind of attitude of just seeing the creation of good karma like creating spiritual money. Is that clear? Is that making sense? What?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I don't think it's the money mind to be aware of these different factors of cause and effect and make sure on multiplying days, you know, and things like that, that we especially go out of our way to create good karma. But what we're talking about here is just leaving it at that. And just, I mean, if we go out of our way to create good karma either with strong objects or special days or special objects or what, and then we dedicate all that good karma for the benefit of others, then it's extremely beneficial. But if we just do that so that we ourselves will have the most good karma with the least amount of effort with a very selfish mind, then we're being extremely limited. And so that's why the giving of the roots of virtue is so important. Because it frees us from just thinking, well, I'm going to do this for the benefit of my own future life. But it's curious with Westerners, because Westerners often, they don't really believe in future lives, so it's easier for them to say, well, I do this for the enlightenment of all sentient beings, because they believe in that, but not in future lives. Yeah. A little bit, yeah. Anyway. Yeah?
You mentioned that.
Okay, so how does dedicated benefit others if we can't transfer it into their account? Yeah. Okay. Well, there's different ways. First of all, when we're making the dedication, it creates kind of a good energy that can act as a support for other people's own virtuous karma to ripen. So that's one way. A second way is if that being, let's say, is born as a spirit or something like that, or if somebody knows that we're dedicating for them, and then they rejoice at that, so then they get some positive energy from rejoicing at the fact that we're making generosity. Okay? So that helps them to create some positive potential as well. Okay?
So they know that
uh-huh.
karma is not transferable.
Uh-huh.
Why would they rejoice at our dedicating karma?
Because they're... if you hear of somebody doing something that's kind and somebody creating a good attitude and somebody saying, I want to give my positive karma to somebody else, I want it to ripen with them, and you feel happy about them generating that attitude, then you can rejoice at their virtuous action, and by rejoicing, then you create good karma. Okay? Right, yeah. And also, you know, if they know, that's one thing, that you create that karmic connection for future lives, and if they know that you're dedicating for them, it makes their mind happy, which really helps them, you know, to get through a difficult situation. For example, I got a thank you note from Cindy today, you know, because when Owen's father died, they called me and I did some puja, and I told them about this, that I did an offering for them. And Cindy wrote and said, you know, losing your parent is really difficult, but it's easier when you know that other people are making prayers for them. Okay? So it helped them with the grieving process. In the same way with Lori, you know, when I talked to her tonight and I told her we'd make dedication for her, she said, oh, thank you very much. You know, and it really gave her a sense of kind of support and, you know, the energy of the spiritual community behind her. And so that can, you know, really directly help people. Okay. It doesn't mean we go around bragging to people, oh, I dedicated for you, you know. But just in situations where, you know, it's helpful for them to know, then it's good to do. Okay, so that's the giving of the root of our virtue. And then the second point under that is protecting it. So we have to protect the root of our virtue so that it isn't destroyed by anger and wrong views. Because if we get angry and, you know, we haven't dedicated, then it can really destroy our merit. And even if we have dedicated and we get angry, it can lessen the intensity of the result or postpone the result or something like that. So we have to really protect it. And so that by knowing that, it gives us some energy not to get angry. Yeah, because if you're starting to get angry, you know, so-and-so did this and that, it's really just driving you nuts. And if you start to get angry and it suddenly pops in your mind, hey, if I get angry, I'm going to be destroying all this positive potential that I worked so hard to create in the first place. You know, is getting mad at this idiot worth it? You know, well, no, I'm not going to let it, you know, harm me twice. Yeah. Uh-huh. Because in that way, kind of, it's double trouble if, you know, not only somebody hurting us, we get angry at them, then, you know, we really make a big problem for ourselves. And so then we decide, well, it's not really worth getting angry. You know, protecting my positive potential is, and rejoicing at that is much more important. And then in that way, we shift our attention to something else. Okay. And then keeping it pure is by continuously doing virtuous actions and to make sure that our virtuous actions are unsullied by bad motivations, such as wishing for the happiness of this life. Or in this particular case, because we're doing a bodhisattva practice, doing virtuous actions simply with the motivation for future lives. So we want to keep our virtuous actions pure by making sure that the motivation behind them is pure. And so that's really why it's so important in the morning, the first thing when we wake up, to do this kind of broad, overall, general motivation of everything I do today I'm doing for the benefit of sentient beings. Because then that's going to kind of cover everything. But then you know, it's good to pay special attention, try and generate it again and again as you do all the different things during the day. But, you know, at least if you set your motivation clear in the morning like that and dedicate it at night, then, you know, there's always something underlying it. And even in some ways, not, you know, we can do it on an action-by-action basis. We can do it on a day-by-day basis, generating this good motivation. But I think it's also especially helpful, and especially if we've taken the bodhisattva vows, to really make the determination, everything I do in my whole lifetime, I want to be for the benefit of others. In other words, I dedicate my whole lifetime to benefiting others in whatever way I can through my practice and my actions. Okay? So that's very helpful too. So that's how we keep the root of virtue pure. Because if we do virtuous actions, but we do them simply for the happiness of this life, then the result we get is only the happiness of this life. And the karma's finished with that. And it's, you know, it's over and done with. And so, you know, when I lived in Singapore, you know, people would come and they would make offerings at the temple or whatever and, you know, please pray that my son marries a nice girl. Yeah? Or please pray that we win the lottery. I had people stop and ask me for lottery numbers. Really? You know? I said, I don't give lottery numbers. I don't know anything about this. Oh, but you're a venerable. You should have special ability. You know, tell me what number ticket I should buy. So, you know, kind of making offerings, creating virtue, but with this kind of motivation, then it's really wasting the opportunity. Okay? And then increasing the root of virtue is to dedicate, you know, all the virtuous actions for the temporal and ultimate benefit of sentient beings. So the ultimate benefit of sentient beings is their liberation and enlightenment, and their temporal benefit is so that they have food and clothes and medicine and shelter and friends and education and, you know, all those things that make for a happy life. You have a question? Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, so how you're imagining them purifying helps them. Yeah. Well, like I said, I think because it sets up this good kind of energy, and that energy can help their good karma ripen. I mean, you can't purify their bad karma. Only they can purify it. But by your imagining this, you know, it sets up some kind of good energy whereby their good karma can ripen. Okay? And if they're in a state whereby they can see you doing this, they might say, oh, well, she's purifying my negative karma. I should think about it. Okay?